Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. It's a pleasure to be here again with you, and I'd like to welcome all our listeners to the next chapter with Charlie, where we dissect strategies and tactics used by successful people to make life changes necessary for their meaningful next chapter in life. My guest today is my good friend Terry Hershey. If you're a frequent listener of the show, then you're familiar with Terry, who's a regular guest. Terry's a prolific writer, conference keynote speaker, renowned landscape architect, and spiritual advisor. Today, I want to talk to Terry about how to recognize all of the hidden gifts in our life, and we will explain what hidden gifts are, and that if we just had the eyes and heart to see them, we would be much better off. And I think we will also discuss the subject of...
Sorry about that.
Oh, we got a little telephones going on here.
Yeah, welcome to the modern world.
No, I have mine off. Mine is in the modern world. Okay, as I was saying, we're going to talk about the subject of Sankofa, which is all about selective blindness, and Terry is an expert in understanding that aspect. So without any further introduction, we've got a one hell of a beginning here. Let's see how it ends up. Let's welcome Terry on the show. Yo, Hirsch, what's up?
Just a second, Charlie. I'll get back to you as soon as I get off the phone here.
Okay, we can put it on hold.
You don't know. The nice part about that is that the strange part about that is that we actually do that now in this world. We can multitask and be on the phone while we're doing other stuff.
So. Well, I know. Today I called you and you were on the phone with somebody and we were having a text conversation while you were on the phone.
Oh yeah, there's a thing you can actually hit. You can actually put that in your system. You just hit a button and it sends the text back to somebody. You don't have to type it in.
Oh, but it your second sentence it didn't type in, believe me.
Oh, I see it. Yeah. Well, that's the thing about being Charlie, you know I'm Amish, right? So when I learn new technology, I marvel at it.
And then you want to play with it?
Yeah, and then I want to try it out. Well, and of course, my son, you know my son Zach, who's 20, he says, "Dad, step away from the machine."
unless it's an electric saw, I mean, a gas saw or something like that.
Yeah, you're dangerous next to a computer or a cell phone.
Yeah, but not next to a chainsaw. No, that's a scary thought. That's a scary thought. Now, isn't this prime time garden time in the Seattle area?
Oh, this is heaven here.
What is your garden looking like today?
Right now, it's because my garden is perennial, a variety of perennials. That means it's seasonal. Each month is new and different things, and now it's rose season.
Oh.
Yeah, and so the garden has about 50 roses, and they're all old garden roses, English roses, and it's pretty...
Oh, man.
It's heavenly.
Yeah, I was planning to come up, and then we somehow blew that. I have never seen you. I've only seen your garden in winter. I've never seen your garden in prime.
It's pretty heavenly
all these
right
years.
Now.
Jeez. You wrote last week a Sabbath moment, which I love your Sabbath moments, and it was titled Touching the Angel's Hand. Now, in this essay, you quoted at length the letter written in 1513 by a Franciscan friar who wrote it to a friend, and it was a magnificent letter that on the value of looking at the divine gifts of life in spite of the troubles and sorrows we face regularly. Would it be possible for you to sort of concisely give us a idea of the primary message of that letter? Do you know it that well?
Yeah, I can actually read part of it too. I mean, his friend was a countess. And the thing about life is it's about what narrative we choose to believe. What's the narrative we choose to believe about ourselves? What's the narrative we choose to believe about the way we interact with the world? And what's the narrative we choose to believe about the people we're interacting with?
So it is a choice.
Yeah, it's a choice. For example, he said, no heaven can come to us unless our hearts find rest in it today. In other words, this isn't something you add to your life. And one of the things we deal with in this culture is that whatever we want to choose, whether it's happiness or well-being, it's like a program we have to add to our life.
Right.
Yeah. And he said, take peace. He said, because the gloom of the world is but a shadow. In other words, there's two narratives. One is that the gloom is real and that's all there is, or underneath that is peace. He said, we may not be able to see it. He said, life is a generous river, a generous giver. But judging its gifts by their covering, we cast them away as ugly or heavy or hard. But if you remove the covering, you will find beneath it a living splendor, woven of love by wisdom with power. And then I love this sentence, welcome it, grasp it, and you touch the angel's hand that brings it to you.
I love that. As a matter of fact, I love it so much that in about three paragraphs down, it was one of the quotes I was going to ask you about.
Oh, really?
Yes, exactly, because yeah. I love that as well.
Yeah, well, the angel's hand is... he calls them the diviner gifts, and even this is even for people who wouldn't connect to sort of a spirituality or faith-based or religious-based thing. But there's something fundamentally sacred about the life that we have here, and something profound about it. And it's easy to miss that. It's easy to not see that.
I love that, but, you know, sacred is an oft-used term that I'm not sure that we really understand what that means. How would you define that life having sacred moments to it? Or what do you mean by sacred?
Sacred is that it means it's profoundly real and profoundly authentic and profoundly genuine.
I love that.
And profoundly noble at its core.
You know, I read a book by Frederick Buechner a long time ago that talked about the sacredness of a tool shed.
And, wow, that's good, yeah.
And I never quite understood it until you just explained it to me, that it is the everydayness, it is the now, and it is the wonder in what is going on right now in the midst of a dirty tool shed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's if I don't see that, if I don't see what is fundamental there, and you could think of the irony of this, every single person who would not even use that language, watch what they do when they see a newborn.
Right.
They see something fundamentally sacred. And as we grow up, we lose that sense that there's something there that is unbelievably genuine and authentic and profound and noble, and it gets buried in all kinds of stuff.
I especially like the concept of noble, that there is something noble about this, something of worthy of high regard.
Right. The word honor, I love the word honor. Honor literally means to weigh heavy. I like that. In other words, you value it. This is of value. And, you know, throughout history, you know, just like take gold, for example, it became something that was, I mean, it's arbitrary that gold became worth something. you know.
Right.
It could have been anything. But we determined that was of value. But there are other things of value. You know it when you see it. For example, you know when there's acts of kindness, there's something of value there. You know when there's acts of love, you know there's something of value there. And we see this when a child is born. We see this when we make vows. We see this when we say goodbye and bury people. There's something of value, at the core of this human being and this life we live. That's sacred. That's what sacred is. And so the question is, how do we make space for that? How do we weigh it heavy? That's the nobility part. And when we demean it, and when we don't see it, and when we castigate it, then that's what gets us in trouble.
So why do we do that, Terry? Why do we demean, castigate, or ignore? What do you think is driving us to do that? Is it just easier to be negative? Just easier to see
things in a bad light? Well, for one thing, we live in a world that's predicated on whoever and whatever we are is not enough. I mean, just like if this had been written in the now instead of the 1500s, you know, he's saying, you know, Lord, have mercy. You're believing the gloom of the world, and you're believing the sorrow that you have, and you're believing this rather than underneath that the beauty that is there. You know, now it would be the next ad tells you that there's something other than what you have.
exactly. Yeah.
Right.
And then as soon as you get it, there's going to be something else.
And then and we're just kidding. That wasn't it.
We're just kidding.
But if you upgrade, to the pro version. So we live in a culture where the word enough is not there. In other words, think about that. You hold a child and you see nobility there, and you see sacred there. And you see the gift of what it means to be fully alive and human. And that's a remarkable thing. And then they grow up in a world where the old adage about when you ask kindergartners how many musicians in the room?
Right.
Everybody, right?
Right.
Third graders a few, sixth graders a couple. And the comment is, we have a great educational system. We start with artists, and we wean it out of them.
Yeah. I was just talking.
That's the answer to your. That's the first answer to your question. Is we live in a world that weans it out of us, and we're afraid to say it. And then the second answer to your question is about this letter. I mean, we need to have permission to basically stop, and that's the Sankofa part: to stop and reclaim what is there. That's what he's saying to her in this letter, the permission to reclaim it. Life is so full of meaning, so full of beauty beneath its covering. But you will find that this life cloaks your heaven. Courage to reclaim it. I love that.
Boy, you're picking all the quotes. I'm running out of things to say here because you're taking all the quotes that I took out of the... I guess we're thinking alike because those are exactly what I was thinking. But you're just so on point with that. Do you think this you know, we have so many movements going on, and right now, you know, we've got this. I don't know where it is in the movement, but it is a prominent movement now of mindfulness and presence. Do you think that is an attempt to find sacredness in the everyday?
I'm wholeheartedly in favor of all of that.
But you think that is part of the attempt is to find the beauty and to be?
Yeah. I mean, anything can be sort of the next best thing, but. At its core, mindfulness is about simply being present. And that's what he's asking that's in this letter. That's what this friar is asking her to do. If you're just present with the life you have now, you won't see everything that buries it.
Right, exactly. And it prevents... I was just talking to somebody yesterday who has an anxiety disorder, and as long as this person thinks about that cause of that anxiety, he just remains in anxiety all the time, waiting for when he knows that an occasion will arise that's going to actually bring on the anxiety.
And sure, so that's a perfect illustration. Anxiety, by its very nature, is the antithesis of something. In other words, it's the absence of something. It's something that is a reaction to something, which means that whatever it's and the antithesis of is greater than. It's more fundamental. It's more real. And as long as I'm focused on the anxiety, which is the cloudiness of the sky or whatever, I'm not saying it's not real. Sure, the clouds are real. But as long as I'm focused on that, I'm missing the fact that underneath that is something far more profound,
exactly.
Far more real, far deeper, and in my words, far more sacred and far more noble.
That was what my friend was saying yesterday, is that he is, every time he finds himself thinking about the event that's going to cause him anxiety,
yeah,
he changes into something in the present, takes his dog for a walk, reads a book, meditates, listens to a book on tape, just says, I refuse to let those thoughts haunt me until, and then when the occasion comes, I just deal with it. And it's such a short period of time that I'm dealing with it that I can handle that. I can manage, you know, the actual thing that's causing the anxiety. I can manage that. I just can't manage thinking about the damn thing all day.
Yeah, see, now, just the simple sentence, I take my dog for a walk. That, I mean, this is an old phrase, too. This goes back to 1700s. I call that the sacrament of the present moment. In other words, I'm grounded. I'm literally here. And when you're grounded and literally here, you acknowledge, you're acknowledging, you're grateful for what is true, what is real. And that other stuff, it doesn't have as much power right then.
It's funny, I was just talking to a server at a restaurant before, it's where I prepare the podcast, and she was talking to me about meaning and purpose in life and where do you find these grand things of, and, you know, the grandeur, as you would say, the sacred and the nobility. And I told her, well, one thing, we're having it right now in this discussion. If we're just focusing on this discussion and the two of us are really communicating importantly.
Yeah. I have two things to say.
One is for, I'm afraid to hear.
Who doesn't know that my dear friend Charlie and I go way, way back, and we'll be eating at restaurants, and I don't really need to talk to people. It's just not my thing. But Charlie will strike up these conversations with anybody who works at the restaurant, and the next thing they know, they're having these conversations about the meaning of life. And and I'm just trying to drink my beer. But what I will say to you is what you just said to her was, see, she was thinking something outside of the moment. And what you said there was perfect. No, it's right. It's in the conversation. That's like people who come to me, like for, you know, help or counseling or whatever. They say, "Man, I wish I had enough courage in my life." I say, "How do you think you made it to ask me that question?"
It's funny that you would mention courage, because I wanted to talk about courage, and I'm going to go to courage. But you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to courage right after a break. I think it's time for us to take a brief break, and then I'm going to tap on courage. Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and my guest today is my good friend Terry Hershey. And we are talking about hidden treasures or hidden gifts in our life that are obvious and are daily, but we miss them because we're so preoccupied by so many troubles and so many different events going on in our life. And I want to re-quote something you already quoted, and it's from a letter from a Franciscan friar to a countess. And you did the first part of the quote, but I also want to notice something that he said in this quote. And he talked about that courage is really necessary for uncovering the beauty that's in and the meaning and the purpose and the beauty of the, of life that is being covered, and that we have to take courage to do this. I agree that courage is necessary, but even before we have courage, Terry, don't you think we need to have a belief that life really does offer meaning and purpose and joy?
Belief always to be. I stumble with that word because I was raised where belief is completely cerebral and not behavioral.
Oh.
And so I had all the beliefs in the world, but you know the old adage, don't you?
I know several from you, but I don't know if I know this one.
Well, no, this is actually a true story.
So that kind of puts a poo-poo on everything we've said so far?
No. That's like the pastor who said during the sermon that said, this story is true, so I'm not preaching now. This part's true.
Okay, so tell me your true story.
So the guy, his name is going to escape me, but he got famous walking. Remember the tightrope guy that walked across?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Okay. Well, it's happened several times in history, and these guys are nuts. Well, this guy used to push a wheelbarrow across with stuff in the wheelbarrow, heavy with stuff in the wheelbarrow.
I've seen the documentary on him.
Yeah, right. So anyway, he pushed 150 pounds or something. And so there was a small, and so he said to everybody, how many believe that I can push this 150 pounds across? Of course, everybody said yes. Everybody. So he says to one guy who weighed about 150 pounds, do you believe it? And the guy said, of course I believe it. And so the guy said, well, then get in. See, that's courage. Then get in.
It's courage, and you know what else it is, too? It's something that you mentioned earlier that I'm just such an advocate of, and that it's choice.
Yeah, and you know what? Going back, it's not even big choices, Charlie. Then walk your dog. Okay, are you in the middle of anxiety? Okay, walk your dog.
Right.
Walk your dog.
Find those
or whatever,
simple things.
Whatever. Yes. The point is, whatever puts you in the moment, whatever grounds you.
You know, that's funny you would say that because I'll get honest here. I have for the past 2 to 3 years lived on a strong morning ritual regimen where I would do some reading, I would meditate, I would write in my journal, and for about the last month I have not done that, and I have really felt the negatives from that I'm not as at peace. I don't notice the goodness that I would normally notice because I find myself so rushed and so busy tackling emails and putting out fires that I forget everything because I'm not taking the time to, I don't have a dog, but I'm not taking the time to walk my dog. You know, I'm not taking the time to do my meditations, to do my writings, to do my preparing my soul for the day.
And I say to you, Charlie, because I've always admired that about you. And in fact, I put a little piece about you in the book I wrote about Sanctuary, about your thing that you used to do in your liturgy for the day. And that's exactly, and it, you can call, that is walking your dog.
It is.
In other words, it's the grounding what the Celtic Christians called KM, which is the Circle of Safety.
Yes, and I had my, and at the time when I was meditating, I actually envisioned a circle.
There you go.
That I was in this circle of safety, and you know, my vision included some other things about that circle, but it was a protected, safe circle that I could.
So think about for a minute what you were saying is that you're out, you get bombarded by other stuff. Well, that's what this letter was about. You're bombarded by stuff. You're overwhelmed by whatever it is, which, and the circle of safety doesn't help you. So just pause, stop, walk your dog, which means find a way to be grounded, because inside of you there's something extraordinary to name, to claim, to reclaim.
What kinds of activities might you suggest to our listeners that they could do to be grounded, to find a groundedness and to observe the sacred and the noble and the honorable in life?
Well, to me, it's always connected to the senses, you know, because that's what really brings us to the moment. In other words, what do you see? See, hear, taste, touch, smell, that
I
kind
see.
Of thing.
Yes.
So that's a big
so
deal.
So it's not me. Cerebral.
It's not cerebral at all. For example, I walk my dog. There are several things going on there. You feel the pavement. You feel the breeze. You see your dog. You smell the dog. Whatever it is, but you're in the moment. You're in the moment. Now, what I've discovered with a lot of people is they have places and times to do that daily and have forgotten it, are not aware of it, walk by it.
Yes. Yes. And because the word that comes to mind is a common word, but because we're so preoccupied with what is about to come or what has come about in the past, The future and the past become more prevalent than the actual present.
Mm-hmm.
Now tell me, we did a podcast one time on Sankofa, and we did a podcast and we were talking about the blind spots, and I think that has a lot to do with what we're talking about now. Do you?
Yeah, of course.
Why don't you explain that so we can understand?
Well, Sankofa from an African language. Akan is the name of the language, from Ghana, but it just means it. It's always a good thing to go back for the things that we have forgotten. That's Sankofa.
Going back to the things that we have forgotten.
Right.
The loves in our life. The beauties that we have experienced.
Yeah, well, you talked about your friend with anxiety. Going back to the fact that underneath that anxiety is someone with fundamental grounding, promise, talent, all of the things that go underneath that. That's what's real. That's what's fundamental. Sankofa is going back to that. It's like when I do reclamation, when you have couples, you know, redo their vows and stuff. Reclamation is a good word for that. But
it really is.
That was a good Freudian slip. But you know, when they're basically, you're going back for what was real before. Let's reclaim that again.
Let me wrap up our time together with on a lesser positive note. But I think it's really critical to our conversation here. And you and I have discussed frequently that today in the United States and in the world, we are living in extraordinarily perilous times.
I would agree with that.
What's that?
I would agree with that.
Yeah, we are facing serious issues both nationally and internationally. I just read in the newspapers that suicides have doubled in the last decade. Opiate addiction is at its most dangerous level. We have killings in schools, And so we have all of these, you know, the news is hitting us with all of these tragedies that it's very difficult for us to Sankofa. It's very difficult for us to see the beauty of the moment and to and it's easy to miss out on the gifts that are often hidden by our own troubles and the troubles of the world. What advice would you offer to uncover these gifts? I've probably asked this question three different times in three different ways, but to uncover the beautiful gifts that we do have and that are extant in our life.
One quick story. So my friend Bruce Larson was a pastor here in Seattle, and he had Parkinson's, and Parkinson's has an interesting phenomenon, which I learned that, you know, it's a disability with your motion and stuff. You lose a framework, right? You lose your sense of balance. And Parkinson's people, when they're really severe, if they see a crack down in the, because their eyes are down, if they see a crack, they see it as a boundary and they can't go over it.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, so I was, Brendan, me too. So like an elevator door opens, you know, there's that crack there.
Right.
They are frozen. They can't move. So his wife, Hazel, this is before he had died, he was frozen. He couldn't move. And she didn't know the reason for that. But to the point of your question, that's what all the stuff that you just said, that's what does to us. It freezes us. Frozen. And so Hazel was brilliant. She lifted his chin up and held his hands and said, "Bruce, look at me. Don't look at the crack. Look at me." That's my advice. Find something to look at. That's not the stuff that buries what is real. In other words, she was saying to him, there's something more profound than the crack.
What do you look at in your life that is the look at me?
Well, two things. One is I have an unbelievable connection to my garden and to nature. And if I don't have that, like your old liturgy things, if I don't have that liturgy in my life, I literally feel diminished. And so even if I'm not in my own personal garden, if I'm on the road, I have to look at the clouds, or if I'm near a body of water, or if I'm near mountains, or if I'm near a garden, I need to drink that in, because that's right here. And the other thing is, I'm very grateful to have friends who have been significant in my life for years.
Yes, you do keep friendships for a long time.
And I know that any one of my friends, including you, is gonna give me that straight answer.
I like that. I like that. That, you know, I did. It's funny that I decided this morning that instead of waking up in the morning, you know what I was doing when I was waking up in the morning? Is my iPad is right next to my bed, and I pull it off the nightstand, and the first thing I do is go to email. That's the first thing I do in the morning.
Yeah.
After I urinate.
Yeah, that tells me your age. But yeah.
and that's simply wrong, because
well,
that is,
you know,
that is just ta- that's
to
taking
just,
me down.
Just a point of fact is I used to check the news. Well, I can't do that. I can't do that. That's the antithesis of everything we've just talked about for this hour.
Isn't it?
It is.
Yes, and so I am returning to my ritual. I made a commitment to myself today, and especially after talking to my friend yesterday, and my friend talked to me about, you know what else he talked to me about that was really good, Terry? And I think it will be very, very helpful for people, is he has a job where he goes to work later in the afternoon, and so he would sleep later and then sort of rush off to his job. He has now decided to get up early in the morning so he can, not early, but earlier in the morning, so he can have time to walk the dog, and where he lives, you know, he can walk to a restaurant, and they're dog-friendly restaurants, and he can walk and tie up his dog and sit with his dog and eat breakfast and walk back and either have headphones on and listening to a podcast or a book on tape or just looking around and admiring what's going on. But the function of that is to reduce rushing.
Yes.
That we are rushing to everything that we are trying to do. And he is trying to put himself in a state of not rushing, because when you are rushing, you cannot pay attention to the present. You are only thinking of the future. You're only thinking of what am I going to do next, because I have to rush to get there.
As wholeheartedly.
Yeah, that was. I think that was just amazing insight. I'd never looked at it quite that way, and I think that is so true. If we're not rushed, we can truly recover, as in Sankofa. We can truly be more present-oriented and enjoying what we're doing without having to think we have to rush to get to the next spot. I recall a guy telling me one time that he doesn't get traffic tickets, and it's not because he's such a great driver. He just said, I'm just not in a rush. You know, I'm not in a hurry. And if you think about that, if you're not in a hurry, you're much less ticket prone than if you're always in a hurry.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and there was something else that came to my mind that I wanted to bring up before we close, and that something else that was entering my mind was or is not coming to me. Doggone it. Oh, I just wanted to mention, because I too, like you, I'm not a nature person to the degree that you are.
Sure.
At all.
Yeah.
But you know how much I did love my gardens, and I always worked in my gardens, and I don't have a garden now because I have too small of a lot to have a garden. But you know what is one of the things that the thing I probably dislike, I know you have several things you dislike about Orange County, but the thing I dislike most about Orange County, and it was after, four, five, 6 years ago, I visited Italy, and I said, Italy nearly ruined my life because everywhere I looked was beauty. It wasn't necessarily nature. You know, it could have been, it was architecture. It was beauty in architecture, beauty in the gardens, beauty in the sculptures, beauty in the arts. And in Orange County, I live in a giant strip mall. There just is no such thing as beauty. And I've got to tell you, I really miss that. It has certainly made me think of moving out of county, because I don't have access to those things that can drive me into the present. When we live in big cities, it's really difficult to be present-oriented because you are rushing and because you are surrounded by such chaos. You are not surrounded by any peace.
Yes.
So what do you have for us?
Well, don't move to my island. Well, it's an amazing thing what you can find, I mean, in places like that. I mean, even when I did live in Orange County, I spent one six-hour period every week down on the water, you know, just a little south of Newport. But
the point is
you go to a place, you find a place, and I think, and you take, for example, that's what makes Manhattan unbelievably livable is the number of gardens they have.
Right.
They have an extraordinary amount of gardens.
Well, you know, you just reminded me. Thank you. You just reminded me every Saturday when I write my blogs on Saturday and publish them the same day. But I always go, there's a hotel that I go to where I can sit after having breakfast in the hotel. I have sort of my table set aside in the lobby of this hotel where I have a view of a fireplace and the ocean.
Yeah.
And it is just, and I spend 4 or 5 hours, 4 or 5 hours on a Saturday there, and it is just magnificent. So I do have my place.
There you go.
So I have found a place. Well, Terry, thank you so much for taking the time to be with me today. I appreciate that. And I want to encourage all of our listeners to check out your post, Sabbath Moment, and that can be found at terryhershey.com. Is that not correct?
That's true.
Yeah, look that up, you guys. You know, this last one I have, matter of fact, I have it pulled up right now. Touch the Angel's Hand is a magnificent piece. I even commented back to you on how much I appreciated that piece. And I want to encourage everybody to tune in to or check out our website, thenextchapter.life. That's LIFE. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off, and bye for now.
You've been listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, right here in Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net.